200 lectures on ancient philosophy. Continues on practically the same ethical and aesthetic levels as during physical existence. The mortal sphere consists of two parts, one visible, the other invisible, but both alike illusionary and material. It follows that he who gives up the illusions of mortal life must also give up the illusions of mortal death. So the philosopher who transcends the imperfections of mortal existence transcends also the corresponding imperfections of immortal existence. Heaven and hell are woven on the same loom, and he who renounces the latter must renounce the former with it. Ignorer. And man may go to heaven, but his heaven, like his earth, is inconsequential. The heaven whose praises are so often sung is designed primarily to augment the comfort of the animal man, to cause only pleasing reactions in the emotional nature, and afford expression for desires and impulses which have their origin in the irrational soul. It therefore follows that it is an animal paradise and becomes insufficient the moment the rational soul in man is liberated from its bondage to bestial instincts. Among the ancient Vikings, for example, heaven was regarded as a hall of gluttony where heroes gorged themselves from a magic larder which ever replenished itself. Heaven, moreover, even cooperated with the feasters by making appetites more and more insatiable, the warriors only leaving their feasting long enough to stage gladiatorial combats wherein they dealt each other mortal wounds which healed immediately. It is evident that this heaven was as much a part of the irrational sphere as the physical earth itself, for it offered but an enlarged opportunity for intemperance and sensuality. Would not Plato, who transcended the sordidness of earthly excesses, also transcend a heaven which existed merely to satisfy the unquenched fires of animal desire? At the entrance to the Elysian fields, where the souls of the blessed dead picked daisies and eternally chanted hymns to the deities, the Egyptians placed a great judgment hall built of rocks as solid as that of Karnak. Here Osiris, painted white, and having upon his person more eyes than Argus, sat in the CYCLEOF necessity 201. Judgment upon the shades of Earth's illustrious, weighing their souls in a pair of ordinary scales. A jury and a motley group of immortals watched the proceedings with keen interest for probably the 100,000,000th time. Does not such a picture afford ample evidence that man's ignorance, unaffected by such episodes as birth and death, continues until the advent of rational consciousness? At this stage, a logical subject for speculation is what happens to an individual who, believing in the reality of the theological heaven, starts out after death in search of the pearly gates and golden streets. Does their non-existence disappoint him? Philosophy answers no, for as the illusions of physical life here are perfectly tangible and real to those who believe in them, so the heavenly city with its foundation of precious stones opens its imaginary portals to all who have convinced themselves that such portals exist. As surely as humanity can delude itself with the belief that there is such a thing as a rich man, it can believe that the gods are richer still and hence can bestow wealth untold upon certain favored dead. We all live in a world of make-believe, and as we pass from the make-believers of life to the make-believers of death, we simply step up our imagination to a higher level and keep right on dreaming, declaring that to be true which never had and never will have aught of fact within its fabric. Conversely, hell is simply that state which is created for us by our own realization of the fact that if the universe has any integrity whatsoever, we deserve to burn for a few millenniums at least. Stupid fears generate our hells and inane wishes our heavens. In what manner would the plan of existence be glorified by having the souls of men roasted on hot spits throughout eternity because they broke some imaginary statute of the celestial code, or, in what way would the glory of God be magnified if more fortunate souls were given grandstand seats and permitted to witness the inspiring spectacle of the devil sitting as high inquisitor, meeting out perdition? When Parsifal, standing in the enchanted garden of Kling, S.O.R., the evil magician, elevated the holy spear and traced with 202 lectures on ancient philosophy it in the air the sign of the cross, the chimerical world of the sorcerer disappeared. The enchanted garden vanished, the flower maidens faded into thin air, the great gloomy castle was shaken and the liberated stones came tumbling down to vanish like mist before the rising sun. So it is with these spectral worlds, heaven, earth, and hell, which the senses have taught us to believe are real. With the opened eye of his rational perceptions, the sage gazes out upon a very different world. First, with mortal eyes, gazing upon the illusion, are seen all those treasures which in our ignorance we have held dear. But gradually, as the eyes of the flesh are closed, the eye of the soul is opened, and like a dream the spectacle of worldliness fades, and in its place the permanent universe is revealed. The souls of men are seen passing back and forth through the swinging veils which divide the chamber of mortal existence into two compartments, carrying the burdens of life, bent with the responsibilities of years, obsessed with the reality of matter, the tired and toil-worn wanderer exchanges life for death. But as he passes through the veil, he still carries with him the old perplexities of his mortal incarceration. We may see him still bent, still broken, still afraid, creeping through the tiny rent in the veil of his existence to continue on the other side the life he cannot cast aside until he rises above his lesser self. To him death is the promise of fulfillment. So he brings with him his empty money bags that they may be filled. He seeks the waters of Lethe, where resting in that state of forgetfulness of all that engenders sorrow, he seeks to assuage the aching of his heart, still the spinning wheels of his mind, and realize thwarted desire. The invisible world gradually assumes the appearance of the office where he labored during the years of earth life. Still, the ticker sounds in his ear, telephones ring, and vast projects torment his tired mind with their complexities. A little while, and this soul drifts into a great vortex of endeavors, vain struggles, and loosened passions. Like a mighty whirlwind, his soul, in company with the souls of millions, is swept about in hope. Tihi cycle of NE Society 203. Less confusion in the after-death chamber. The sighing of the wind is the morning of deluded souls. Suddenly the curtains begin to sway, and through them sweeps the torrent of air back into the world of the living. A little child creeps through a tiny rent and, burdened still with the affairs of life, crawls into mortal existence. The years pass and the child again becomes a man. Still the tickers sound, still the struggle for gain goes on. Again the back is bent by responsibilities, the life soured by unfulfilled desire, until at last, carrying with him the same POS sessions that bowed his back before, the soul creeps away again to rest. Yet what is rest? Just more longing, more desire, more unrequited love. Thus age after age the will of the law goes round, age after age man comes and goes, bound to its spokes of agony, and this fools in their folly have termed life. All this the opened eye of philosophy lays bare, all this the sage perceives with enlightened vision. He knows the unreality of heaven as well as hell. He realizes that both are but projections in the substances of a more subtle element of the same impulses which have taken a beautiful earth and made of it a breeding ground of greed and a house of discord. Death is not a liberation from ignorance, nor is it a solution to man's problem, neither is it the end of anything. Death is but an exchange of vestments, it is no cure for that sickness of the soul which the wise term ignorance, back and forth between the chambers of life and death man passes until he wears ruts. In the stony floor he treads. Yet he is never free for he escapes one prison but to enter another. With perennial hope he faces each new scene, only to find that he exchanges bad for worse. Birth and death are illusionary in that they seem to be a change of state when in reality they are but a change of place. Though man were lifted to the heights of Olympus he would not be greater than himself, and though he were hurled down ward to the depths of the inferno, no virtue that is innately his could be taken from him. The philosopher realizes that these extremes are but illusions of his own mind and remains unmoved by either the 204 lectures on Ancient Philosophy, sense of height or depth. Having mastered those attitudes and perceptions by which man is enslaved, he is free from life and death alike. He has found another door, so that he no longer travels between the two halves of the mortal sphere. But leaving the whole chamber of the world behind, he ascends into that vast domain where walls are as distant as eternity, and where limitations are measured by space alone. Therefore, of him it is said that he has stepped down from the wheel and has broken the fetters that once bound him to necessity. For he has accomplished the necessary end, namely, realization of the unreality of mortality. He knows the import of the sage's words, that though a man die 1,000 times yet shall he live, for he himself has died many times while still fastened to the will of sense. Reborn through the disciplines of philosophy he is no longer subject to death because he is no longer capable of desire. Desire breeds death, and he who has liberated himself from desire has liberated himself from death. Ignorance and death, which are synonymous in their inner nature, are indeed the last great adversary. He who vanquishes this twofold monster by that power which is the inevitable product of right thinking, has achieved conscious and enduring immortality. Life and death as we know them are but passing phases of existence. This does not mean that the philosopher achieves to the state of physical immortality, for no one who is wise desires to live forever in any one slate. It means that the rational soul, neither slumbering nor sleeping but forever awake and contemplating the face of truth, has been so liberated from the limitations of erroneous perceptions that, though bodies come and go, it remains unmoved, preserving forever that unobscured vision and unbroken continuity of reflections, which alone constitutes immortality. A quality characteristic of the gods is endurance, and man approaches to divinity when he increases the span of enduring consciousness. Physical matter must abide by the law of its own substance, hence to all things composed of physical substance dissolution is inevitable. As the animal nature is